And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
And those who have come so far on their journey to equality have a responsibility to reach back and help others join them. Because for all our differences, we are one people.
You are listening to Context, where the past meets the present.
Democratic Republican, he won the election.
We are live. This is Context, and thank you for watching, and thank you for listening. If you're actually listening after you downloaded this on iTunes or maybe streaming it on Stitcher. But yeah, Context is where history meets the present. We have a lot to talk about this episode. We have not one, but two guests, and just a lot of excitement. The main topic is the Electoral College. And so, but first of all, I want to introduce everybody. I am Mr. Beat, also known as Matt Beat, also known as Beatmaster Matt, also known as that weird guy that's always talking about history. And you can find me online at Mr. Beat's Social Studies channel. And we've got this guy from Oklahoma that I actually met in real life recently. Go ahead. Who are you?
I'm Robert from Reading Through History on YouTube and Teachers Pay Teachers and Facebook.
Yeah. All right. Great. And then a special guest. I call him a super fan because he's been extra supportive of my channel, of this podcast, of just in particular my presidential election videos. And that's kind of how we met each other on YouTube. But I have Ian from South Carolina. Ian, you want to go ahead? Yeah.
Good evening.
It's Tom Ritchie country down there.
Oh, yeah. And later we're going to have Tom Ritchie join us as well, another person from South Carolina who's a little bit more well-known. No offense, Ian, but he kind of has a following. But no, Ian is pretty awesome. Like, excuse me. I've been drinking this eggnog and 'tis the season, but I think I got some. I'm choking on it. But anyway, Ian is just amazing. He's only 11 years old. He's in fifth grade, and he already knows pretty much more about history than Robert and I. So that's pretty much why I had him on tonight. Just basically, you're taking over the show.
I was afraid he was going to come in here and take over.
Take our jobs. No, I mean, he does know a lot, and he's well-informed, and he mostly has learned a lot by just going on the internet and, you know, doing his own searching. And it wasn't in the, I mean, hey, go ahead and tell me what you were telling me off the air, Ian, about, I guess, how you feel about history, how your classmates feel about history.
Well, I'm like the only one who really cares about it. And I've come up with a new line when someone says that they don't care about it, be like, well, if you don't care about history, you really don't care about what happens to yourself either.
Boom!
One day what happens
true
to you now is going to be history.
That's right. That's like our friend Cypher from The Cynical Historian. He said on one episode, you know, you basically, if you like learning about yourself, then you like history. I mean, it's the quickest way to learn anything, and especially about yourself. So, yeah, good. And then what have you been learning in fifth grade about history this year?
Well, we're currently doing, and I don't really know what we're currently doing because we're switching a little bit. We were doing something on Alaska and Hawaii. So,
yeah, we stole Hawaii and we bought Alaska. There we go. That's the
yeah, great. It was totally peaceful.
Totally peaceful, as John Green says.
Went a lot better than the Philippines did.
Ooh, yeah, I bring that one up to my students, and they're like, we did what? We put Filipinos in concentration camps? No. I'm like, yeah, we don't like to bring that up so much. But, yeah, so Ian, tell us about, like, first of all, you have a YouTube channel of your own. I've seen you actually have a few subscribers, so you want to go ahead and promote that?
Yeah, I've made some. I used to make some Mario Kart videos. I deleted them because I didn't think they were very good, but I still have a few of them. And then I have a. I tried to make a discussion on a Mario Kart. video. And then I had a video where I gave a shout out to Mr. Beat.
Wow.
That's why I had to have this kid on, Robert. I was just like, man, you know, and you have, he's going to, I mean, he's been bugging me to make it, not bugging me, but asking me to make certain videos about certain topics. And I know you asked me several months ago, and it won't be until early 2017 when I finally get to making these, but what are the videos that you want me to make and what can we look forward to?
Well, I was going to do something with Patreon. I haven't figured that out yet. But I was hoping for, like, a video nations, like, a few topics of it, like, how do you get sent, what do they do, and where is it? Because I've looked it up online, but it wasn't very helpful, so...
Yeah, don't you steal the idea, Robert? He's probably, that's up his alley. Like, I'm going to put him on the spot now. Ian, have you ever watched Robert's channel, Reading Through History?
No.
No one has, Ian. It's okay.
Well, you'd like a lot of his videos, too. Like, he works with, oh my gosh, what's his name?
Jake.
Jake. Don't tell Jake that I forgot his name. His partner, Jake, they work on videos. They do a phenomenal job. They just actually did a video about Fidel Castro, which was very educational.
Yes.
We'll talk about that a little later, but about how, you know, Castro is no longer with us. But yeah, you also, okay, the United Nations video, and then you wanted a video about what else?
Yeah, I wanted a video on the California 2003 governor election.
Yeah, and why was that election so weird?
Because they had 135 candidates on the ballot.
That could end up being...
Jeff's country out there. He loves 135 candidates.
You can't pass that up.
Yeah, that would be a very long video, potentially. And then...
You're good at making long topics, pretty short. So.
Yeah, I try. Try to simplify. That's my goal. And then we've got what else? We had two other videos that you wanted. I'm trying to remember.
Well, I wanted a video on Citizens United versus FEC. I think the fourth one, I think you should just ask your viewers what they want.
Oh, that's gracious of you. All right, well, sounds good to me. I still don't know. I want to do another series since the presidential election series is pretty much done. I will have the 2016 video coming out at the beginning of January after the electors actually vote. But yeah, I think I like the idea of like a series, like something to kind of look forward to. And
some person gave for the wars that we fought in.
Yeah. There's a lot of wars, though. That's the problem. That would take me probably 5 years.
Yeah, that's Cypher's territory. He's got a series of videos about the small wars.
Yeah, I could just say, I'm just going to do the major wars, and then for the rest, go see Cypher. Maybe that would work. But all right, well, great. Yeah, I promise you that those videos are coming in 2017. But we're here to talk about the Electoral College. Ian, how much time do you got here? Just a few more minutes to...
I got plenty of time.
Okay, because I know it's past your bedtime, and you have to go to school tomorrow, young man. And I guess we do too, don't we, Robert? Yeah, we
unfortunately.
Have.
Unfortunately,
yeah. At least they pay us to do that. They don't pay him; they force him to go. All right. So, the Electoral College, as I was saying, December 19th, electors, basically retired politicians, people that kind of run the political parties. Just kind of average people, they're the ones who are actually voting for president and vice president, and they haven't even voted yet. And this is part of, in my opinion, the flaw of the Electoral College, is because it's not really technically Americans everywhere who are voting for the president and vice president. It's the electors. But yes, yeah, so this hasn't even happened yet, which is why I wanted to wait to make my... I'm getting a lot of people saying, hey, when is the 2016 video coming out? Come on now. It's a great story, you know, as if we're not already all sick about that election. But anyway, I wanted to wait for that reason. And before we begin, I wanted to share a little bit about how I posted on Facebook a petition that had went around shortly after Election Day. And the petition said that we need to abolish the Electoral College and come up with something else, a better way to pick to vote for president. And I didn't comment on it or anything like that. And in fact, I posted it on Facebook, and I wasn't on Facebook for several days after that. And this is on my personal account, not the Mr. Beat account. And I come back, and there is a straight-up war going on this thing. And people are just, you know, going back and forth like, you idiot. No, you're an idiot. No, you're an idiot. And I was just amazed by how much everyone was an expert on the Electoral College. It was amazing. It's like everybody had, you know, doctorates in history, and they've read all the Federalist Papers, and they understood exactly what the Founding Fathers intended. And not only that, I got not one, not two, but three comments on that saying, you don't know what you're talking about. You need to do your history. They said that to me. The guy who's made a video for every presidential election in American history. And I do not consider myself an expert on really anything. I'm not an expert on anything. But if there was ever anything I was at least somewhat of an expert on, maybe I could one day be an expert, that would be American presidential history. Like, I've always really loved to learn about the presidents and the elections. And so I felt a little offended by this. I was like, come on now. But it just showed me that 2016 is the year that everybody thinks they're an expert. And this trend is getting worse and worse because of the fact that everybody's in their echo chambers, and they, you know, they have a lot of confirmation bias that's reinforced constantly. And they assume that, oh, I'm an expert because I can do a quick Google search, and therefore I can easily disprove whatever argument that does not already fit my confirmation bias. And it was just frustrating that people weren't having an open mind, and they just assumed that my post was partisan, or that I was against Donald Trump, which everybody knows that I've always hated the Electoral College since I was Ian's age, and also that I did not support either of the major party candidates. I did not like Clinton or Trump. I hated both of them, actually. I was quite candid about that. So anyway, that shows you how, you know, confirmation bias has been so severe with this debate or dialogue we've had about the Electoral College. What do you guys think? I'm talking too much here. Robert, what do you think about this current dialogue everybody's been having about the Electoral College?
It's just the liberals with hurt feelings. If it would have gone the other way, you wouldn't hear a peep from them. And that's basically all that has to be said. If they think they're better than the Founding Fathers, I mean, they don't even know who. The irony of this here is their hero, the person they're just gushing all over, the person that they're, this is the greatest play in the history of the world, the Hamilton crew, the people who got Mike Pence, the vice president-elect. I think he paid $1,700 for that ticket to go in there and have them lecture him. I mean, the mastermind of the Electoral College is their hero, Alexander Hamilton. They know nothing about the man at all. Nothing.
Yeah, that was...
But as you said, everyone thinks they're an expert.
That was a little ironic.
We've been doing this 700 times. They've tried to change the Electoral College, so it's not popular. But it is kind of, I think, necessary. I mean, the way it was set up and their reasoning behind it is perfectly sound. You know, and just five times in American history, it didn't match the popular vote. And if you go back and look at some of the people that it kept out of office, or you could say, hey, it kind of works, you know, it ended Reconstruction. Some of that, you know, kept Al Gore out of office. Of course, you got W. Bush in there, so it's not like that was a great thing. But, you know, Andrew Jackson, people look back at Andrew Jackson, oh, he's the most horrible president ever because he did all of these things. You know, it's just people don't like the results. They're going to complain about it. They're going to find a scapegoat.
All right. Well,
if
just
you think
so
you know more, anybody that thinks they know more than Alexander Hamilton and James Madison about the Constitution or the government or how it's supposed to work or protecting the little people from the big people, I mean, the people who want us to get rid of it, just let California and New York pick the president every single time because that's what you're going to get. I mean, it's set up to protect us from them.
Right. Yeah.
That's what democracy is. You're supposed to protect the little from the big, getting crushed constantly.
I disagree with you on so many things you just said, but just the first thing that comes to mind is the you said it's only happened five times. Well, that's 11%, and that's a really bad record for the Electoral College.
It's better than the pollsters.
What'd you say there, Ian?
CGP Greg said that would anyone tolerate a sport with a 11% failure?
Right. Yeah. That's a great
baseball fails every time. I fall asleep.
CGP Gray's video, which was first made in 2011, so you know, a lot of people got on there and said, "Well, you just like Hillary Clinton. That's why you made this video 5 years ago." But anyway, and then that's the video that pretty much when I first saw it, I was just like, he got me thinking about things I hadn't even thought about before, and I had already hated the Electoral College before that. There's another good video by Adam Ruins Everything, and that came out a year ago, and the same thing happened to him. It's like everybody got on there and said, "Oh, well, you just like Hillary Clinton and you hate Trump. That's why you made this video 1 year before the election actually happened." So, but it's just funny. It shows me that, like the debate on my Facebook post was like, Trump supporters were defending the Electoral College. Hillary supporters were saying, we need to get rid of it and replace it with something terrific.
And yeah, so,
if you, go just a few days ago before Trump won the Electoral College, he's like, the Electoral College is such a horrible system.
He said that in 2012, I believe. Is that right? I think.
Well, I thought he had said that on the 4th of this month.
Oh, really? Yeah, you know, possibly. He's on the record saying it, tweeting it, actually, that he hated the Electoral College. He thought it needs to be replaced. But yeah, it is funny how when it's your guy, it's like, well, wait a second, maybe the Electoral College isn't so bad. So,
would you repeal? Well, not repeal. Would you make it alternative vote or ranked choice voting if you could? I think that would be a really good idea.
Robert, you want to answer that one first, or you want me to?
I think Americans are too stupid for that. They don't have the patience or the learn. I mean, to sit there and rank them, they could screw up the hanging chads in Florida in 2000. That'd be a nightmare. So, I mean, where does it end? 5, 10, 15, 20, 128 people? You just rank your top three, maybe? It might work.
Well, I know...
You have to have some sort of a limit on the, you know, the number of votes you get in that column, if that makes sense. Because if there's like 15 people running, you pick your top three.
Mm-hmm.
They might be able to handle that.
I'm going to share the screen with you guys. We're going to look at the actual actual countries that currently have ranked voting, instant runoff voting, whatever you want to call it. Australia is the one I always think of, and people seem to like it there. Like when I see posts on Reddit about it, they're like, "Yeah, it works just fine." We've got a bunch of other smaller countries on there, like Malta. Ireland has it, apparently. I didn't know that. Estonia. But there's not a lot of countries that do that, and I can see logistically, yeah, for a larger country, it would be more challenging. You'd have to have multiple elections. I don't know. Like, I think this is something that CGP Grey is definitely a fan of, and others. I've heard it a lot. I just think, like Robert said, maybe we're not ready for that. I would not say we're necessarily too stupid for that, but I think that
we are.
Excuse me. Do you like the idea, Ian? Do you like instant runoff voting?
I think it's a good idea. Of course, we'd have to tell everybody what it is.
Yeah, there would have to be a new... I mean, it takes me, when I teach the Electoral College to my students, it takes a good week to get before they start to get it down. So it's not like we already don't have a really difficult system to learn in terms of how we vote for president and vice president. My idea as kind of like a transition to maybe this, and there are other ways we can vote, but I think we could keep the Electoral College in some way, but just... kind of do what kind of Maine and Nebraska does, where you split up the electoral votes by district. And I think that might work better as like a temporary measure. And I know that currently or recently, 10 states, including also the District of Columbia, have all changed their policy in terms of their electors. They had laws that said your electors have to vote for whoever won the popular vote. So in that case, most of those states are Democratic states, obviously. But say there wasn't, though, say your state voted for Donald Trump, but since Hillary won the popular vote by 2 million votes, then your state would actually have to vote for, your electors would have to vote for her instead. I mean, there's things that you can do to transition. Would you, Robert, do you think that would be a good transition maybe if we want, or a good compromise maybe? Instead of going straight to the popular vote, Mike.
What exactly do you mean? Like the states, like clarify what on well, which one of those choices?
I would say the one Maine and Nebraska currently have a system where they divide up their popular votes by district. And so, for example, in 2008, I was living in Nebraska, and the district I lived in voted for Obama, and the other two districts in Nebraska voted for McCain. And so one of those electoral votes went to Obama, and then the other two votes went to McCain. They just basically split up their electoral votes based on how each district voted.
If you did a percentage or something, it might make sense. But you know, here's the issue. It's like if you do the popular vote, the Republicans will have a hard time ever winning a presidency again. If you break it up by districts, the Democrats aren't going to stand much of a chance of ever winning again because there's too much red districts in the middle of the country.
Well, so because of gerrymandering.
We have, therefore, is the one that makes the most sense because you can rig it either way.
But gerrymandering has to go away, too. I mean, that's
say
the biggest
we go,
issue.
I mean, it's those huge – I mean, what do you do? I mean, will you be happy whenever it gets to where Oklahoma has one vote? Will the people be happy then? Because, I mean – California and New York, it's a huge advantage anyway.
Yeah.
Like I said, if you go popular vote, they'd have a hard time ever winning again. I could rig it the other way, just districts for every member of the House of Representatives you get, and then the Democrats are going to have a hard time winning. Therefore,
yeah, there'd have
what
to be legislation
we do
to
makes
prevent
sense.
That. Yeah, there'd have to be additional legislation, I agree. Like Ian, what were you saying?
Well, I was going to say that if we did proportional then it would be good in theory, but you got to remember that you'd still need 270 to win. And if you don't get 270 to win, it goes to the House. So putting it proportionally would just,
and basically it's the same thing as,
would make it the least democratic it could possibly be.
Man. Yeah. He's 11 years old, Robert, 11 years old. See, I think our future is looking bright. But no, yeah, you're right.
Well,
this is
we had more one kid in his entire class.
But I think that is a great point. The House of Representatives has only voted for president twice in American history.
They didn't go with the popular vote either.
Right. They went 1800. They went for Thomas Jefferson. 1824, they went for John Quincy Adams, and both were that was both controversial. I mean, I think, yeah, there's still flaws. There would have to be, at the very least, there would have to be legislation, probably amendment to the Constitution that gets rid of gerrymandering, a way to divide up districts by counties where it's not so looking like snakes and like, where it's actually, you know, you could get somebody who's good at math and to say, okay, here's how we're going to divide up the districts. If you look on certain websites, some people have already done this. They've divided up districts. Maybe I can find one here. But I think generally additional legislation would have to be needed. So I'm just saying that's not perfect, but it's better than what we have.
Got a lot more faith, and I'll go with the founding fathers over faith in our current politicians.
Yeah, but that's another thing. The founding fathers they're overrated. I mean, they get a lot of credit.
Overrated. They wrote the Constitution and gave us the system and the best government in the world.
Right.
At the time.
We're not disputing that.
Countries all around the world have tried to mimic it, and they can't. They've tried to emulate it, and they cannot. And I realize you're like, well, just let the cities decide, but that's why our founding fathers put it in place in the first place.
Well, there's several reasons.
Popular vote, that's what's going to happen. You can't go in and like every single state's different. And the only way you could possibly redo it, you know, is you would wind up with the state legislatures having to redo their districts, and they're already the ones in charge of it anyway.
Now, you made a great point, and you said this earlier, is that Republicans would be screwed if they didn't have the Electoral College. As we know, it's only been Democrats who have been the losers when it comes to winning the popular vote but losing the Electoral College. Republicans have historically benefited from this, and then especially lately, there's no incentive for Republicans to change the current system because it would directly negatively affect them. And so it's not going to change unless, you know, the reverse were to happen where a Democrat won the Electoral College and Republican won the popular vote. Now, that said, if it's going to change, it's going to have to be in a non-presidential election year. So maybe 2018, we could talk about this again. We can bring up the, because it's not going to be reformed anytime soon because people are still pointing fingers based on, well, you just wanted Hillary or you just wanted Trump. And that kind of goes against my point. Like, we need to have a clear, open mind on this and weigh the pros and cons. And there are many pros and cons. I think it's you know, kind of false to assume that, you know, it's just, well, the cities are going to rule everything. Like, and you say the cities are going to rule, but one important statistic to remember is that 81% of our country live in cities or suburbs. 81%.
Yeah, so we got to be protected from that. I mean, the people who live in New York City and Los Angeles are so out of touch with the rest of the country that it isn't even funny.
But you could say that everybody
you're saying,
that doesn't
live... Well,
we
got cities with 15 million people. That makes up three of our states.
You could make the other argument that people that don't live in cities are so out of touch with what's going on in the cities.
No, the vast swath of America is nothing like New York City and Los Angeles.
It's not just New York City and Los Angeles we're talking about here.
That's Seattle and Portland, where they riot.
We're talking about 80.7% of the population in this country lives in an urban or suburban area.
So, and then you cited the statistic 11%. So that's actually working out in their favor. You said, 11% of the time it goes the other way.
No, it's not, because
so it should be 17%.
We have a system that favors in particular small states, and it does not favor large
Guarantee
states.
They didn't come here and campaign.
Oh, that's another problem.
When they
were
in the big.
Is that they?
It would be the same thing, though.
They only campaign in the swing states. They only campaign in the swing states. We lost Ian. I think he came back. Are you there, Ian?
There were two of him while ago.
He has a twin, identical twin, I guess. No. Now you're green. Well, I don't know what's going on there. can you hear us, Ian? Okay. Yeah, we don't. For some reason, we're not getting the picture.
Green machine.
Well, this is a podcast, I guess, and it's just our faces. We're not really that beautiful. But anyway, you brought up a lot of points in there. One thing I want to focus on first, though, is if you live in California, your vote is only worth only a third of the vote as somebody who lives in Wyoming. So another way to put this is people that live in Wyoming.
You're getting
their
to
vote,
decide you're partaking in something that it's 55-3.
What do you mean 55-3?
Electoral votes.
But more people live in California.
So let's get them to 70, 80. Let's just give California 170. So that way we don't even have to do an election.
So
and the liberals can run the show, and then they can finally shut up.
But you're saying that all votes are unequal. Can you confirm that? That you believe that votes are unequal, that not every vote is equal?
A vote is a vote. I mean, some people are getting to decide something that their state's 55. Some people are getting to decide, because what is each district? It's like each representative represents like 160,000, 180,000 people.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, you could do it by district or something like that, but then, like I said, the Democrats are going to have a hard time ever winning
because of gerrymandering.
It's not gerrymandering; it's just states are different. I mean, what is going to happen in Oklahoma? You're not going to get a blue district.
But Karl Rove even admitted this at the state level. The state legislators have been successful at getting the districts drawn to favor Republican candidates. They've admitted this. It's not like this is a secret, like a
I mean, how else
conspiracy.
Is that supposed to work in Kansas?
Well, I guarantee you there'd be a district that would be blue.
Take one little piece of Topeka where I live. And then just strip it out across the rest of the state and just have lines where each one starts in the city and then it goes across a vast swath of the rest of the state.
But it's a myth to assume that there's only red and blue states when the vast majority of states are purple. They're not, Oklahoma, you live in Oklahoma, that's a pretty red state. But no, the vast majority of states.
South and the entire middle part of the country. And New York's blue. There's nothing you can do to change that.
Of course there is. Look what happened with Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania.
Just pick people up and move them.
I'm saying,
which the people get everyone move.
Yeah, they could move.
Yeah, I mean, let's go total Gestapo here and say, no, Hillary should have won, and by golly, we're going to make it where a Donald Trump can never happen again.
But you're missing,
just
I mean,
populism you just needs to die, the people's voice, the movements. We're just going to set it up to where absolutely the liberals run the show.
You're not doing a good job hiding your bias, Robert. You're not, you keep bringing
up
liberals.
I'm just saying
liberals.
That's what this is.
It's a liberal conspiracy, okay.
They would not be complaining about it if Trump had won the popular vote and lost the Electoral College. We would not.
But Trump would be complaining about it. Go ahead, Ian. What were you saying? Oh, Ian, did you want to say something?
No.
Okay, well, back to my point. This is really important to me. This is the most important point, is that the fact that your vote is, if you live in California, no matter where you live, rural, urban, suburban, whatever, your vote is worth only
people in Northern California whose vote does not count.
Let me finish.
Los Angeles is going to determine the election every time.
Your vote is only a third of a vote as somebody that lives in Wyoming. Somebody in Wyoming has three times the voting power.
What is three divided into 52?
Somebody in California.
What is three divided into 55?
No, that's faulty math. That's irrelevant math. That's not the point I'm trying to make.
If you vote for the winning candidate in Wyoming, and then it goes because the Electoral College is the one that counts, not the popular vote.
Yeah, that's what we're debating here. And the Electoral College needs to go. That's the whole point.
No.
It promotes inequality of votes. I think every vote should be equal. And there's overwhelming evidence that backs this up, Robert. You should watch the CGP Gray video. He lays it all out. He breaks down the math. If your votes in these small states, like in Kansas and Oklahoma, our votes are inflated compared to other states like New York and Texas. Texas
Oklahoma
is a big one.
Say is seven. California
but when you
says
actually,
55. The Electoral College is a way of balancing that out. That's the point I'm trying to make.
It doesn't balance out anything. All it does is it gives more power to small states. They have more power. It doesn't like help out, like, oh, we're going to help out the small states. No, it basically kicks the big large states and the privates.
Well,
saw
this
large
coming
states,
whenever they were debating the Constitution. That's why you had the large state plans, Virginia, New York.
Right, the great compromise.
Had to have a way to balance that. That's what the Electoral College is.
That's right. It doesn't make it right in the year 2016. And it's the great compromise is is sort of apples and oranges here, because we're not talking about representation in a in the legislative branch here where people are actually voting on issues. We're talking about one vote for the president and vice president. I think that should be distinct from how the, you know, the houses are divided, you know, House of Representatives in the Senate, Senate by two for each state, House for based on population. I think that the Great Compromise, honestly, I think lives up to its name in 2016. I think it still was a great idea. And I, in fact, as a matter of fact, I might even disagree with we talked about this where what was it, the 16th Amendment that said direct election of senators?
17, I think. 16th.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, 17th, where we think that maybe that was a bad idea because it kind of brought in a lot of unnecessary special interests and stuff like that.
Turning the people who are supposed to be looking out for the states into politicians. Like
exactly.
One of the worst ideas in the history of the country.
Okay. Yeah, you typed a lot here, Ian. So, yeah, sorry. See, you said we should have ranked choice voting. The states or federal level is fine. Yeah. Anything you want to chime in to say here, Ian? Or?
There is something, you probably already know this, but the Electoral College isn't democratic because it wasn't supposed to be.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it wasn't supposed to be. Alexander Hamilton wasn't really that big of a fan of democracy. If you read the Federalist Papers, that
he was
like
a big fan of monarchy, though.
Yeah, he wanted King George.
That's
yeah.
Like, I've got this whole list of ironies here that I wrote out.
Should we bring up? Wait, go ahead and read your ironies, and then maybe I'll respond with Federalist Paper number 68.
Well, I've got here that, you know, the people, the actors in Hamilton, you know, wanted to get on a soapbox and lecture the vice president-elect of the United States, Mr. Pence, and that they like, apparently, you know, people are just falling in love with Alexander Hamilton. And I've got here, you know, he was the most statist of all the founding fathers, probably. You know, he was even a big idea. He's a big fan of, you know, he even had conversations with George Washington about becoming king and stuff like that. Well, he was a big time crony capitalist, and with the banks and the money and politics, that he's the guy who created the central bank of the United States, for yeah. crying out loud. And the liberals are supposed to hate the big banks, or at least, you know, the Bernie faction. He's the guy who came up with the Electoral College.
He got his Bernie shirt on.
Yet at the same time, he was a nationalist. He said the Constitution was very frail. He wanted to severely restrict. I can't even read my own writing. You know, he supported monarchies. Do you have any idea what this means? He wanted to severely restrict. It looks like it says segregation, but I can't read my own writing.
He wasn't a fan of the Bill of Rights, was he? I know.
Well,
he fought the Bill of Rights.
I was the anti-federalist who insisted on that getting in there. But the Actors Guild, that all of that, you know, the Hamilton crew would be a member of, they don't allow immigrant actors in Broadway roles. It's called the Actors Equity Association. American actors go first. They try to stop immigrant or foreign actors from coming in and getting roles on Broadway plays. And the Hollywood Actors Union has the exact same set of rules. They're very anti-immigrant. They're very anti-foreigners being able to come in and get roles and stuff. They try to restrict all of that. So I found an extreme amount of irony in, you know, people on the political left who love this play, Hamilton. And, you know, they're just like Hamilton was the greatest founding father of all or something. So it's kind of ironic.
But I think that a lot of people agree with that, because a lot of people do love the state, whether they admit it or not. And they do love a strong federal government. And they do love a lot of what he did to kind of, I mean, if you even look at Thomas Jefferson, James Madison, James Monroe, the, you know, the Democratic Republican Party that used to be so against Hamilton, if you actually look at their presidencies, they compromised on a lot of issues and they ended up having a stronger federal government. You know, Thomas Jefferson buys Louisiana without, you know, the consent of Congress. Later on, you have the National Bank being approved by both Jefferson and Madison. You have, you know, sooner or later, government will grow, and it's been consistently growing since our founding. And I think Hamilton is really won out in the end. Ultimately, Hamilton has had more of an impact, I think, on our country's direction than I think somebody like Thomas Jefferson. I mean, I think Jefferson gets a lot of lip service, but when you really look at what he actually believed in and what we have become, I would argue Hamilton has had more influence.
Plus a $20 trillion debt. Not necessarily a good thing.
I'm going to share Federalist Paper 68, number 68. This keeps getting brought up. This is the one where he's talking about, we don't know if it was actually Hamilton that wrote this, but most people assume that it was. And he basically in here is saying that, you know, sometimes the people get it wrong. Sometimes we really can't trust democracy. Democracy is overrated, and it would be nice to have this, that's the, you know, the system we have, electoral college, where we can act as a buffer in case the people go with an idiot or something like that. And a lot of people argue that, wait a second here, maybe this is finally our chance. If you think that Trump is a dangerous person so much, even Republicans, then maybe this is your chance to actually use the Electoral College as it was originally meant to be used. Because originally, remember, there were no laws that said that the electors had to go with the popular vote of their state. The electors were there, according to many of the founding fathers, actually agreed with this. They're saying, you know, we need to have some kind of buffer between grassroots democracy and people that actually know the system and understand the system and can better make decisions for the for everyone, more informed decisions, I should say. Kind of elitist, basically. So what do you think about, I'm just curious on your thoughts about that, guys.
Does he want to have a go at it?
Yeah. Ian, you wanna, what do you think about the fact that Alexander Hamilton thought that, you know, democracy was overrated and maybe Electoral College, the true purpose there was just to be a buffer, to not let the people make a stupid choice and vote against their interests so the electors would make a correction?
It definitely didn't go the way he wanted it to.
That was a big question. Sorry, I know we threw that on you. You weren't paying attention.
I think he was reading something. But Trump is a reaction to the elitist system. I mean, that's what he is. And I hate to think what would happen if they went in there and did that. I mean, I've talked about this before. You know, the Tea Party was the first wave against this elitist Republican establishment, and what's going on in Washington, D.C. They're the ones who went, oh, we'll fix this, we'll get rid of this, we'll go do all this stuff, get rid of Obamacare, blah, blah. Didn't do a thing. You know, Trump's the second wave. You know, drain the swamp, get all of this stuff out of D.C., get all this stuff out of the politics, get all the corruption out, get the donors, all of this stuff out. I mean, he won the election for a reason. I think a lot of the Republicans still don't get that. I mean, some of them are starting to come around. And you even see, you know, Mitt Romney up there rubbing elbows with Trump, trying to get him a cabinet position. You know, he was one of the leaders of the Never Trump movement.
Yeah, and now he might be Secretary of State.
He's coming around. I mean, I fear to think what would happen if they went in there and basically said, oh, we're just still going to push Hillary Clinton through. I mean, that shows you how stubborn it is. I mean, she was the worst candidate the Democrats possibly could have thrown out there, and they threw her out there just because it was her turn, because that's the way Washington, D.C.'s worked for so long.
Well, but I think Alexander Hamilton maybe would have been okay with people, the electors rejecting Donald Trump, I think, if he was alive today, you know, right? Because he was that elitist person, right? He was kind of for more of the establishment. Do you think that would be the case?
He probably would be a Hillary Clinton fan.
Well, no, I'm not just necessarily Hillary Clinton, but somebody with more experience, like because of the fact that we've never had a candidate or a president-elect now, like Trump, where he has no political experience. That would freak
The president appoints people to run all these positions. The president of the United States does not go in there every day and run the Department of the Interior.
Yeah.
You've got the Joint Chiefs of Staff that run the military. You're supposed to be a manager. I mean, part of the problem is presidents, like the last two, trying to micromanage everything and executive orders. And, well, if Congress won't do this, I'll just flip of a pen. I mean, that's what people are just getting sick of.
Yeah, I do agree that people would
sick of politicians.
If the electors decided on December 19th to say, hey, like there's already been two that I know of, maybe more, that have said they're not voting for Trump, even though their state did or something like that.
You got all these wackos sending them death threats and stuff. You know, we'll kill you if you vote Trump. And
well,
electors.
I guarantee you those death threats would come from Trump supporters too, the people that say they're going to vote for Hillary. I mean, let's not like say it's just would be one side. I mean, I think that
that's why they should have done it as soon as the state's confirmed. It should just go through. Or just keep the system we have and get rid of the electors. You just get the points. I mean, why do we need some big official thing anyway?
Well, that's something we agree on.
The state's confirmed, just boom, it goes on the board.
There have been 157.
And I can understand why we did this back in the horse and buggy days, but now it's like, why even have them?
See, there's points we agree on then on the Electoral College. That's an easy one. Just get rid of the electors directly voting for president. And the fact that we've had
the percentage of a state's votes. I mean, if Hillary gets 60% of California, she just gets 60% of their electoral votes.
That's perfect.
You don't need all
that's
this
great
crap.
It's not
stuff.
Well, not perfect, but it's better. Yeah, well, that we can agree on. We have a solution. There's a compromise. I think that would be a huge deal.
So it is a huge headache.
Yeah, here we go.
I'm just trying to say, getting rid of it, there's enormous danger in it. And the fact that, because I think New York's got 27 votes or something. California's got 55.
Well, Texas
has
a lot, too.
What's the math on that?
Oh,
yeah, that's like 36, though.
I can pull it up here. It'll change for the next one in 2020. Let's see here.
Will the census be in by that time?
Okay, screen share. And we're sharing. And there we are. Yeah. But while I have this up, I was going to say 157 electors in American history were faithless electors. They voted
2000. We need the 2010 one.
Gosh, that was a fail.
55 plus 29.
Oh, yeah, we got 38 and 29. And Florida has the same as New York now. So you keep talking about New York.
Boy,
but
what is that? Hillary actually won. Wow. They're trying so hard, man. They're like, it's probably some guy's prediction.
That was a prediction.
His prediction.
Yeah.
227.
This is 2012, but it's the same number of 12 votes.
I'm horrible at math. What is that, 80, 91, if you win those two states?
Yeah. I don't,
350. This is how clueless these people were. I mean, I just want to do a show just about how insanely out of touch these people were with their predictions and the polls and...
Yeah, but
Hillary Clinton landslide.
It's easy to say that now, you know, like Monday morning.
Well, I was wondering what the heck they were talking about when it was going on, just the support that Trump had. I didn't see any way she could win a fair election.
What is, I just don't understand. How is, what evidence do you have that this, the, you know,
he
this
would have
been
25,000 people show up, energetic. She would show up someplace and 500 people would show up. She was having to go to county fairs and stuff just to get a crowd. There was no energy at all for her. None.
Okay. Ian, I just saw your messages here. All right, so you're gonna head to bed. Okay. So, Ian, thanks for being on our show.
Yeah,
sorry,
Ian.
We kind of probably scared you off too a little bit there with some of that talk, but I want to really thank you for your support of this show and my YouTube channel. You know, you give me hope for the future, and thank you for being so awesome. Don't forget to stay awesome, as the Green Brothers say. You want to say anything else before you sign off?
Watch Mr. B.
Well, they're doing that right now, I think. Yeah. All right. Well, we'll have you on some other time. Maybe when you're running for president here in a few years, we'll have you back on. All right.
Gosh, y'all will love me then, Matt.
All right. We'll see you later.
Yeah,
you'll be like 63 or dead. 64 years old.
Yeah.
Of course, I could start chain smoking cigars and live to be 90, like
George
Fidel
Burns.
Castro.
Oh, Fidel Castro. Yeah.
Otto
von
Bismarck, I think, made it to 83, something like that. He smoked 14 cigars a day.
That's evidence there. That one anecdote. That's why cigar smoking is good for you, kids. I'm kidding. No. So should we keep talking about the Electoral College, or should we switch gears?
Tom Ritchie. I mean, I thought the first half of the show was going to be Hamilton and Jill Stein and the re-elections, and I didn't even think this was supposed to come up until 9 o'clock.
Well, we'll bring it
up
again.
He's
going to
show up in 6 minutes.
I'm going to say, until Ritchie gets here, I think we should bring up, we can go back and forth. It's okay. It's okay. We're all over the place. It's okay. I think we should bring up the passing of Fidel Castro, and obviously a lot of attention on this. What was interesting, when I first heard the news, I saw the BBC posted it, and so I like retweeted it, and then I went to different websites to see how they're reporting the death, and it was interesting. For the most part, most news outlets were fairly objective, more objective than they normally are. And then I looked at the comments. And I looked at the comments for Fox News and then New York Times, and then I looked at CNN, and then I looked at CBC, the Canadian Broadcasting Company, I think is what that stands for. Anyway, it was just so radically different. Like, there was amazing. The CBC, there was a lot of positive things said about Castro. And then obviously
Hollywood loves him. I mean, you got those actors and actresses talking about him like he was some sort of a god or something. How just being in his presence changed their life. I mean, just crazy stuff. Justin Trudeau, Prime Minister of Canada. I mean, the stuff they're saying about this guy. I mean, I could have done an objective thing about him if I had to, if I was literally trying to do the news. You could say he was a towering figure, who molded and shaped and dominated the landscape of Cuba and the life of the people in Cuba and defined what Cuba is. This big Cold War figure stuff, but I mean, this unbelievable, just the accolades that they're giving this guy.
Well, and, I think he has – it's very binary. It's very either you love him or you hate him. And I feel like a lot of the comments were just like spewing hatred or spewing love. And I'm just like, isn't it somewhat more in between? Because, I mean, all right, let's just get this out of the way here. He was a dictator, and he did imprison people and even kill
a few
people.
Executed 15,000 people for dissenting against him at least.
Well,
trial, lock you up, torture you.
Wasn't as bad as Stalin, right? Not nearly as bad as Stalin.
No.
But no.
But, I mean, if you do the math on the number of Cubans he killed and fix it to America's population today, it's like 6 million people.
Goodness, I didn't know that. I just pulled up some random article. I don't even know what VOA is, but it had some
Voice
interesting facts about him. Well, I thought that I like the bullet points here. They talked about how he's the world's third longest serving head of state after Queen Elizabeth and the King of Thailand. And I was surprised to hear that. I think I want to call you out here, Robert, because I think in the video you made about Fidel Castro, you said that he ceded power to his brother Raul in 2008. But I thought it was, I said here 2006 originally. But I guess you're right. It wasn't official until 2008. Yeah. But Raul's getting up there, too. You think that, you know.
Isn't Raul? I mean, I thought originally until I saw the pictures when I was making that video last night, I thought Raul was older. He certainly doesn't look older. I mean, Fidel looked terrible.
Yeah. No, he's younger. He's 85. But obviously, 85 is not.
He looks a heck of a lot better.
That's why I always assumed he was. Now, is it going to go to his daughter? Or,
oh, gosh.
Or, I mean, like, what's going to happen here after he passes? Because you know it's going to happen
soon.
Let's
set up the Electoral College in Cuba and let them have an election. Then they can argue about that. I mean, that's the amazing thing. We spent how long arguing about the Electoral College? As soon as Tom Ritchie comes on, it's going to fire back up after a six-minute interlude here. You know, in Cuba had a dictator.
Right. That's not too far away. I mean,
90 miles
from Florida. And to think about all the millions, it is millions, right, of refugees that fled Cuba for the United States and that were out celebrating in the streets.
Our lesson, which was probably written 2012, was what I made that video off of. It said it was 1.2 million, like, that have done the whole, but I thought that number sounded extraordinarily low, but because there's got to be more than 1.5 million Cubans living in the United States. But I don't know. I mean, if they're all, the vast majority of them are in Miami, maybe it's not as many as you would think.
Yeah.
I had some Cuban students whose father was from Cuba, I guess.
Oh, wow. Well, did they ever tell you their thoughts on that, or?
Oh, I mean, they came up from time to time, but they didn't have too strong of opinions about it. I think they said some of their family was related to him, though. And I have taught students with the last name Castro.
Well, that's a pretty common name. I just think that I know we've talked about the fact that President Obama has opened up relations to Cuba, and generally it's a good thing to, you know, get off that embargo and have more cordial relations, especially if they are, you know, embracing capitalism a little bit more and maybe democracy in the future. Maybe we can influence them to start being more democratic. But, some people are afraid that, with Donald Trump coming in, maybe the tone's going to be different. Maybe the relationship is not going to be as cordial as it would have been if it was somebody else. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, that would certainly be something I would disagree with the Trumpinator on if he, like, tried to put all that stuff back in place. Because we've tried that for 50, 60 years.
Yeah,
and it hasn't worked, and I mean, people suffer. And the only way you get towards an improved, you know, relationship is you have to start doing that, because just pretending they're not there, putting embargoes and stuff, definitely not a fan of it.
Yeah, I think you and I pretty much agree that we've had an embarrassing history with Cuba, especially Bay of Pigs.
Yeah, because he didn't go, like, with that communist declaration and all of that till after that happened.
It's just that he was talking trash and then that he was going against corporate interests in America. That was really, I think, what it was about, money,
the casinos.
I wish I knew more
about Batista, the guy that was in charge before him.
He was a friend of the United States. I know that much, that he was definitely going along with,
like, the New York Times and a lot of the media was actually pro-Castro leaning. The stuff they were writing before any of that happened.
Yeah. Yeah, it's quickly changed in the 1960s. And What's crazy to think about is that 1960s, wow, like the fact that, I mean, I was talking to somebody the other day who didn't even know that Fidel Castro was still alive, and he's like, what, he's still alive? Like, but the fact that he was around for so long, and I think a lot of it, I mean, he saw his country stagnant economically in many ways. I mean, sure, there's some things you could say about Cuba that's positive. I know Michael Moore went there for his documentary Sicko and looked at the fact that people are covered with health care and all that. But I mean, the fact that doctors get paid hardly anything, that they have to drive taxis, you know,
they don't even have cars in the country that are post 1960.
Yeah. I mean, economically it's, and Fidel Castro saw this. Maybe part of it was just being stubborn, like maybe this communism thing is going to finally work out. I'm just waiting for it. And he died last Friday.
Waiting for it to work out somewhere in the world.
It just never worked out for him. It's just like, okay, maybe now finally, especially after Raul is not in power, they'll start to make reforms that will help them economically.
Imagine what the tourism down there could be.
Oh, yeah. It's I don't know. I think Cuba, it's a big tragedy, and I know that Castro wanted what was best for his country. I really sincerely believe he wanted what was best. He was trying to help, and there's a certain point for every dictator where they just kind of they become out of touch. They stop listening to the people, and they kind of are just, they feel like they're on a pedestal. And
but I mean, why would a guy hold on to power that long if he wanted what was best for his country? And you see it failing in the 60s and the 70s and the 80s and the 90s and the 2000s. I mean, that's not the best interest of the country.
No, I meant
now, originally.
Early on is what I meant. Yeah. Clearly in 2005, he's just like, you know, this is all for you. I mean, the fact is there's a huge underground economy in Cuba that's going against the ideals of the Castro regime, and it's been that way for a long time. It's not like they're all idiots and they don't see the rest of the world, what's going on around them. Like, it just, capitalism is in place in most of the world's most governments have embraced capitalism for a good reason. I mean, sure, it has flaws, but come on now. Like,
makes the money, that's for sure.
Well, it's kind of similar
to what's happened in China. It's just unbelievable.
Oh, yeah.
Get that mixed market economy going. You know, they'll never give up the power. But
yeah. Well, then again, neither will most other governments throughout the world, including the United States, which you could say is a, you know,
back to
the
elitist. You see how hard they're trying to stay in control.
I'm not sure what time Tom's going to join us. I just looked at it because he said he has to watch The Walking Dead. And
my gosh, he may not, we take second place. Tom, you can watch it later. DVR it.
Well, he's always afraid of spoilers. And then I'm missing the Chiefs game right now. So, I mean, this is much more important than the Chiefs game. Come on. But I think we should bring up, are we ready to switch gears? Because I think we could bring up the Jill Stein thing.
Do we want to get into that and then Tom pop in? Or
I'd say so. It's related to the Electoral College. And I mean,
it's ridiculous, but I mean, it makes some money, Jill. Getting some headlines, Jill. She's raised like almost twice as much money in 48 hours as she did for her entire presidential campaign.
Yeah.
And it's from Hillary supporters. And well, I think in a way she's kind of like trolling them or something.
No, I think she in many ways doesn't like... I mean, she said that Trump was the lesser of the two evils. I think she said that on the campaign
trail. When it came to foreign policy with Russia.
Oh, just foreign policy.
Guarantee it politically. No.
Well, let me pull up the page here. The recount splash, what we're talking about. We've got, this was an interesting development, I thought. So the, whoever loses in a state, whoever gets less votes in the election cannot, request a recount, right, it has to come from a third party, right, or an outside source. And so Jill Stein agreed to take it on, especially because the count was so close, especially in Wisconsin, or I'm sorry, Michigan. Michigan was like 28,000 votes or something like that. And, you know, like they're going for all three states where there's a, you know, there's some anomalies. There's not, there's machines that count the votes. And so there could be problems there with hackers, they say. And so the voting machines maybe could, you know, maybe it's wrong. And so we could, they wanted to do a recount here. And so they raised all this money very quickly. Of course, all the Hillary supporters jumped in and donated money. So, but it looks like right now it's just, I believe, Michigan. They're still trying to get money for Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, I believe. The due date for Pennsylvania is tomorrow, and oh, they already got Wisconsin, so they need Michigan by the end of the month here, so 3 days. anyway, so it's they've got a lot of attention. I think I think it's always good when it's really close. I think it's not necessarily it's their every right. They have every right to request a recount, and I mean the only issue I could see with it is maybe they're, you know, that's a lot of resources, a lot of money that would be required, but they raised the money to make it happen. So if they raise the money, I don't see the problem with it. What do you think?
People will give up their money. Why is she not going after the states that Donald Trump lost by 4,000 votes, like Vermont?
He only lost by 4,000 in
there's some Vermont. Of the states that are way closer than these. And Michigan, it's all paper ballots. They didn't use electronic voting machines in Michigan.
Wow.
I mean, this is like, you're not going to hear this from the mainstream media, but yeah, Nevada was way closer than Pennsylvania in some of these states.
Wait, you said...
Hold it over New Hampshire. Did I say Vermont?
Oh, yeah, you said Vermont. So New Hampshire...
Sorry, New Hampshire.
Yeah, that was very close. Wow.
Yeah, go check out Nevada.
Nevada was... okay, similar to Michigan.
Try Virginia. I can't see it on my screen.
Yeah, Virginia was close to...
Yeah, why are we going in there? The states that came out blue. Minnesota, check that one out.
Yeah.
Oh, so, why I mean, is she not going after these states, Matt? Why are we not worried about voter integrity in those?
Well, it's pretty clear that...
all states that Donald J. Trump won?
Because I think it's clear Jill Stein wanted... Hillary to win over Trump.
Or she wants this is... money from Hillary's people. Because think about the lawyers and the people at the that are getting the money off this crap.
But you think that Stein like has financial gain from this?
Getting
like...
attention for it. I don't think they're going to spend all that money. She literally said in a tweet, any money left over will go to future
voter integrity. That Stein's going to run for Senate for Massachusetts.
She probably needs to do something like that because they've got to get in on the ground level like that.
I always wondered why.
Yeah, this is ridiculous. I mean, everything about this voter recount is ridiculous.
Well, I think they have the freedom to do this. If people want money to be, like, say they do the recount and then it actually changes the results, then...
In Michigan, they've already counted them twice. That's why it took so long.
Oh, they did. See, I did not
call
know that.
It. Yeah. And it was paper ballots. It's completely useless. And all these other states, they're saying, oh, there's no evidence of any tampering or any anomalies or any hacking or anything like that.
Well, I tend to agree. I mean, yeah, and I tend getting, to agree with you on this. This is, you kind
it's
of...
getting her in the news.
I just don't understand. The only motive I can see is because she'd rather have Clinton in office than Trump. That's the only thing I can see. But we've kind of I don't know. There's not much to say on that one other than that, because I think a lot of it's just speculation. We really don't know. But it is interesting to see that, you know, that there's a lot of fighting going on, like a lot of pushback, more than I've seen since 2000, the election of 2000, as far as protests. You know, you had like 100,000 people protesting in New York City the other day, protesting the elections, like not our president, you know. A lot of people upset. And again, more than 2 million people voted for Clinton.
Million illegals voted, Matt.
But there's no evidence
for that. You know how many millions of dead people voted?
But your evidence is very shaky. I've done the research
very
on that.
Shaky.
I've not seen research that backs up what you just said. You could be... I think you're repeating a talking point from some obscure right-wing website.
I mean, the president of the United States literally went on TV and said to illegal immigrants, you can vote and there's no repercussions.
But it doesn't matter.
He literally said
that
in a TV interview.
And what if some of these, what if a lot of these illegal immigrants voted for Trump? I mean, you ever consider that?
Yeah.
No, I mean, seriously, maybe they're
digging really deep.
Well, you said it yourself that a lot of Hispanics in this country
right, legal
supported Trump.
Because they don't want Mexico following them here.
Oh, okay.
If I left a country and moved here to get away from that, I don't want the country following me.
If you can show me a credible source, because I keep hearing that. Like, I keep hearing, all these illegal immigrants. And then Trump tweeted today. He said that, you know, all... If you didn't have these millions of illegal immigrants,
we need to be spending $10 million looking into that, not a election that wasn't even on electronic ballots for voting anomalies that's already been counted twice and confirmed.
Let me look
into that, or stop these dead people from voting and the multiple votes. And I mean, it was all in the Project Veritas videos. I mean, that I posted, and you said you were going to go check them out.
No, I did check them
out. That's your credible sources for voter fraud and election
fraud. But no, if you look at the sources from those videos, like, they're not really, they don't.
So people
give you
in
hard
charge
data.
Of the election.
I didn't.
They're in New York. He literally says they bust these people around.
But those were anecdotes, Robert. They were anecdotes. Like, you don't have any widespread
study. It's the guy that's
in
charge of the elections.
But there's only, I'm telling you, like, we don't have any reliable data on this, okay? And so to make assumptions, like, that there's millions of dead people and illegal immigrants voting for president,
there's
videos
of them going in and where people are going through obituaries, seeing who died recently so they'd still be on the voter rolls.
I've seen that video.
I mean, those things are real.
But that's just one case. I mean, it's not like it's widespread.
They literally say in the videos, we've been doing this since the 1950s.
Right. Voter fraud has happened since since democracy was invented. Okay, so why do you always have to make it out like it's a conspiracy?
That's
like,
why we need
George Soros
be spending money on. He's paying $35 an hour for people to go riot.
But
Portland.
See, that was also debunked as well. Breitbart reported. Breitbart reported on that, but then later it was debunked. So I mean,
yeah, he's not signing the checks personally. He doesn't have time for that.
Okay, well, maybe we can agree on that point then. I don't like to just jump to these assumptions here when we don't have hard data, not a lot of evidence. And I'm sorry, but I'm not going to just keep speculating. That's literally why alternative media has a bad rap right now, not just so much because it leans.
Oh, boy, at least they called the election right.
Yeah,
New
but
New York Times was like 98.3% chance Hillary's going to win. I mean, they were celebrating that morning.
Yeah, I know.
Ridiculous.
That's one thing, and that's why I pay attention
to them.
That's
why the alternate media exists. It's because they're so bad.
I just don't think you should only rely on the alternative media, because a lot of what they do is just contrarian.
MSNBC and CNN, that's for dang sure.
Well, the big problem is we don't have
RT.
We don't have investigative journalism anymore.
No, we don't. It's dead.
That's the sad truth about not only I said earlier about how 2016 is the year where everyone thinks they're an expert. Well,
and that's what Project Veritas is.
And you know, it's like, but the problem is a lot of people that are not experts, they think they are informed. They have a wide audience, you know, and like us, like that's why I try not to say too many absolute terms here, like, because I don't want to accidentally spread misinformation. I'm just trying to, that's why it's always safer to look at history, because at least with history, it's time tested. We can, you know, there's more time to reflect and look at the complete context of things, hence the name of the show, Context. I mean, so a lot of this present, you know, what you're seeing in the news cycle right now, no matter where you get the information, I'm always suspending judgment when I can. I don't want to just, that's why I'm always trying to like say, I'm not, you always just assume that I disagree with you. But
that
really
makes
what
the show more interesting.
But really what it is, all I'm doing is
parroting,
I'm not
each other. It's pretty dull.
You're right. Because we agree on a lot. But I think that what I'm trying to do is I'm just trying to like suspend judgment. I'm just like, well, hold on a second.
Well,
now
just look at their handling of Castro. We had that conversation earlier. I mean, people acting like he was some kind of a hero or god or something.
That was the comment section, though. That wasn't like the actual article, like, was fairly neutral, in my opinion.
Well, that's kind of how it. I mean, you should come out and say, you know, a horrible guy and killed people and locked up dissenters and. It's not like they're having elections down there.
Yeah, no, I agree. You got to have all that stuff, and your video did a good job of that. So, I guess since Tom has yet to join us, let me.
Where is he?
I don't know. We'll just.
Have
I think
you texted him and say, dude.
Well, let me check my messages here. Oh, he did send me a message. Okay, so he said, I'm pretty exhausted after spending almost 4 hours tutoring this evening, but I'll try to stop by for a bit. Tutoring. Yeah, right. You're watching The Walking Dead. We know what you're doing. no, I think I do want to talk more about the Electoral College. I'm sorry. I know you are sick of talking about it, but I think that this is it's great we're having the majority of the country this be in their conversation, because this is something I'm always bringing up, and I'm always yeah, this is one of the things where I have a clear opinion, and I'm glad we disagree on this, because,
what exactly do you want done to replace the Electoral College, Matt? You're in charge of replacing it. What do you do?
I think for starters, like I said earlier, we have, you divide up by district the electors, and so therefore you go for the popular, or like what you were saying where you have the percentage of the popular vote that was won in the state, that's what percentage of electoral votes.
You know, one of the arguments I hear against that is that's way more susceptible to vote fraud.
How so?
Because you can easier swing a percentage of an election by those districts than you can an entire state.
Okay, I can kind of see that.
It's way easier to steal points that way than to steal a whole state.
Okay. But together with that, there would have to be new districts. There would have to be a way to...
Who's going
to
draw these things?
Well, that's right now, it's the state legislators that...
Yeah, who else is going to... Because you say they gerrymander. So who
there
else
has to
are
be
going to get to draw them?
There has to be
who's
a constitutional
unbiased
amendment. Well, that's the thing. Like,
we
that's
could get the Russians to do it.
That's the true dilemma, though, right? Is because the now that we have a Congress that is going to be Republican majority, you're going to have the president. You know, you have two branches of government that is Republican. Even though Trump is not your typical Republican, he's more independent, in my opinion. You have. Probably Supreme Court's going to change quite a bit here, and so like why would they vote against their interests? And it's really sad, because if you were to poll the majority of the country, I think the majority of the country is against the Electoral College in its current form, at least if they know really what it is.
Well, Congress's approval rating,
yeah, really low too.
They keep re-electing them.
That's so frustrating, and you know it's also like what we talked about before the election, how. Well, we hate both candidates, but we're going to vote for one of them, you know. So I think the main thing is
we're going to have to see. What Ross Perot would have done in this election.
But he wouldn't be needed because a lot of his ideas were co-opted by, you know, Donald Trump. I mean, think about NAFTA. Think about TPP and, you know, stance on immigration. I'm going to try to pull up something I found about. There's like a meme I saw. It has like 8 amendments that need to be added to the Constitution. And I know the last time that they tried to amend the Constitution to get rid of the Electoral College was in the 1970s. Yeah, I don't know if I can find it. Dang it. I saw it on Facebook. But the last time they tried to amend it, it just did not. The common arguments was you're going to ignore the people in the country. You're going to ignore the small states. And to me, I always use the analogy where if you have a ghost town, why would you have the people? Why would you have democracy in a ghost town when there's nobody there to vote? And I know that's a stretch here, but my point is, yeah, if we get rid of the Electoral College, the politicians are not going to come to the vast majority of the country. But we have the internet now. We have ways to learn about platforms and where we can hear speeches and we can hear all these ideas from the candidates without having to leave our house. We have a situation where there's still just a few giant cities that where most of the country lives in, and there's generally one within, I would say, driving distance that where candidates would still visit. The current system we have now makes it so that the swing states are the main places the candidates visit or pay attention to. Like Kansas and Oklahoma are never visited by presidential candidates for this reason. I feel like my vote's never represented. I feel like...
I mean, you were saying earlier it counts like way more than a California vote does.
Which I don't like. It's unfair. I mean, yeah, I think
but
it's
you
unfair.
You just said
that my
your vote doesn't count.
No, my voice isn't heard.
True?
My voice, well, especially as a...
Well, your vote is your voice.
But my voice is 3 times as much as somebody maybe in Texas or California. Well, it's not 3 times as much, but it's at least 2 times as much as somebody in Texas. My vote in Kansas is 2 times the value, according to the Electoral College. So,
but
yeah.
But who's going to win those states. I mean...
And that's the other thing.
Part
it's like,
of the problem is, I mean, the best argument we've got here is like those 5 swing states. That's where they spend all their time, effort, energy, and money because they're winner take all.
And
as if you did the percentage thing or something, that wouldn't happen.
Yeah. So that might take care of that. I'm still trying to find
what
that.
What would be interesting to know is, if you did the percentages, then I guess whoever wins the popular vote would win every time, right?
The percentage?
Would it be the same outcome? Like
yeah,
Hillary
it would.
Clinton
it
won?
Would.
Well, then, basically, why not? Then it's the same as doing the popular vote.
Well, what's your biggest beef with the popular vote then? What's so wrong with the popular vote? It is more purely a form of democracy, which I know the founding fathers weren't necessarily very big fans of democracy. And Mr. B, don't you know that we live in a republic, not a democracy? So yeah, but what's wrong with the popular vote? Because
probably,
to me,
probably because it just.
To me, popular sovereignty is one of the main themes of the Constitution.
I mean,
it's
the popular vote matters on the state level, like state by state. You know, it doesn't necessarily matter on the national level.
But states are
just... still voting for those electors. You're not voting for the president.
But
that's kind of dumb, but you're voting... So someone actually does win California. Someone actually does win Texas.
But state borders are sort of arbitrary if you look at the history. You've seen that show, how the states got their
borders.
Shapes. Well, that's
but
the
I
thing.
Still pay my state taxes. If I lived in Texas, I wouldn't have to.
And But you look at local elections, state elections, that's another thing. A lot of times in state elections, and this goes for why Congress keeps getting reelected, people just vote for their team. Mm-hmm. They vote for, you know, the R's or the D's down the ballot. So maybe something as simple as getting rid of political party affiliation on ballots or making it harder for people to find out political party affiliation.
The Democrats and Republicans write those rules, though.
Right.
They'll never get rid of, they'll never do anything to harm their interest.
I just feel like so depressed this episode because I know that I don't expect any kind of reform happening anytime soon. I was kind of hoping maybe in a couple of years that there could be some major reforms here with the electoral process, but it just is frustrating to me when you have the majority of the country not like something, and yet that's the way it is. You can't change it. And it is. I mean, Republicans, there's no reason why. If I was a diehard Republican, then why would I go against the Electoral College when it directly benefits me?
Yeah, they would not have. The last two Republican presidents would not have won.
Well, last four.
So, I mean, if you want to go back.
Democrats,
I mean, just
lost
saying the last
times.
Two that got in there.
Yeah.
Trump would not have won.
Bush.
Bush Jr. wouldn't have won. You'd have to go all the way back to what? Richard Nixon? I guess Ronald Reagan. Just like a whole decade went. George Bush, the elder, I guess, probably won and would have won in 88. Yeah. We would not have literally, since 1992, we'd had one party rule. That'd be fantastic.
And
that's as undemocratic as you can get right there with one group. Right, that's an oligarchy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely.
Well, so when vote we have to get rid of the Electoral College is a vote for oligarchy. Remember that, Matt.
Not that simple. But, I mean, you mentioned a good point earlier, the first past the post that we have where you have to get you have to get past that threshold, and that's all that matters and for each state. Where I feel like so many votes are just not paid attention to at all. And you say that ranked voting, instant runoff voting, that requires too much thinking.
I wish we lived in a society that could handle that. It's like, I want to vote Trump, and then I want to vote Gary Johnson, and then I'll go Jill third. You know, Trump gets 3 points. Johnson 2, Jill gets 1.
Well, they say that Johnson would have won the election if we had instant runoff voting, which is crazy. seriously, I just saw the
probably
the article.
I mean, I know there are a lot of people that wanted to do it, and they just couldn't. And I was torn on it because I was like, my gosh, the stakes in this election are so obscenely high.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to put up an image here. This is just, again, from Wikipedia. But just for those of you who don't know how instant runoff would work, and it doesn't even have to be for president. It could be for just the Congress. But you count the voters' first choices, and does a candidate have a majority? No, then you eliminate the last place candidate, and then you distribute the eliminated candidates' ballots, and then keep going until a candidate has a majority, and then the winner is found. Now, you'd have to have multiple elections here. So,
well, we don't need to do that. How's it just rank them?
So, yeah, we could get rid of we can still
system.
Have one election.
Because I guarantee
system.
You, yeah, if he was your second place choice for most people, you know, they just couldn't, because they're not going to vote for, you know, the Trump people are not going to vote Hillary.
Yeah.
I mean, he probably would. If he was coming out number two, and then the rest of the country was split 3-1, he would have been right there.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing to think. And maybe the requirement be that you have to get on the ballot in
all
50 states, which he did.
Yeah.
I think Stein was on 48 or something.
Wow.
But, it, you know.
They came on strong.
They did, but not in the popular vote. I mean, Johnson finished with 3.3% or something like that. Stein finished with 1%. I mean, in the end, people ultimately just went for either
yeah,
or.
Yeah, I mean, it's just...
It's
they couldn't.
What did that
the
appear?
Odds, you know, the stakes in this election were just enormous. What direction the country was going to go.
But really? Like,
yes.
I mean, I don't buy that.
Yes.
I don't think that we would have gone to World War III if Clinton was elected. I'm sorry. I don't assume
no,
that.
No, that's not even what I'm talking about. I'm crossing the Rubicon here.
But look at Trump like, already since he's been. President-elect, he's, you know, he met with Obama for a long time and had a good talk with him.
Yeah.
He considered Obama being a kind of somebody who could be like an advisor, unofficial advisor to come help him out. And he's softened his position on issues that he talked about during his campaign. He seems to be somewhat more moderate despite the fact. I mean, the fact that Mitt Romney was invited. I mean, Romney, in my opinion, is a more moderate guy than a lot of the other people that were mentioned, you know. I don't think that I think he's pragmatic as most politicians. If you look at every president in American history that was successful, they were pragmatic and they learned how to compromise, form coalitions, but also, you know, they realized they might have to give up.
That's certainly not what we've had for the last 8 years.
I think he was pragmatic to a point. I think
no.
Especially,
how many Republican votes did Obamacare get?
Well, but see that that's not like
that's
he
not
if it was up to Obama
along with the other side.
But Obama didn't want Obamacare, which is crazy. You can quote me on that, by the way. That's a great quote.
Oh yeah, they want to direct the system so they could get something bigger and better later.
He wanted he wants single payer. Obama wants single payer health care. And so he did compromise by that legislation because he said, hey, we're still going to...
wrecking it so he can get it later.
He said that. He was on the record saying...
Well, the guys who wrote the bill and the speeches and stuff for him, I mean, they're on TV laughing about how stupid American voters are and how they thought it was funny that they promised us we could keep our doctors and they knew it wasn't true. They did whatever it took to get it through. I mean, that's ridiculous.
And I think I saw a recent poll that, yeah, the majority of the country is not happy with the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, whatever you want to call it.
The Unaffordable Health Care Act.
Yeah, that's exactly why, because it's health care is so expensive. I mean, it would have gone up anyway. We have special interests that wrote the legislation. We have crony capitalism that persists, and we don't have a true marketplace.
Yeah, like
so,
I
of
said,
course, the
I
costs
mean,
are going to go up.
Trump promised he would take care or try to fix some of this stuff. I mean, like I said, that's the guy's popularity.
But another thing about Trump where a lot of people were like, oh, well, maybe he's not going to be so bad, where he immediately came out saying, well, I'm not going to repeal it now. I'm just going to make changes to it. I'm not going to get rid of the coverage for those up to 26. I'm not going to get rid of the coverage for pre-existing conditions, patients, you know, and, you know, he just wants to get rid of the mandate. And so I thought that was interesting, too, that already, you know, we're seeing a moderated view. Well, and that's another thing. Who knows? Who knows is exactly right, because, you know, we know that Trump said a lot of things just to get elected, that he didn't mean everything he said. In fact, he's just blatantly lied sometimes, but people didn't mind. You know, that's what's crazy to me is to see how people, they are protesting. As we speak, there are still people protesting in the streets, and it's been how long since Election Day? Today is the 27th. Election Day was the 8th.
Well, they're like professionals. I mean, look how long Occupy Wall Street went on.
You
it
think they were professionals?
Well,
pays well?
$5 an hour.
Come on. You don't really believe that
did you read all the WikiLeaks?
But that was, okay, maybe a handful of people did that, but there's a lot of
agitators, the people
protesting.
In charge of it, they bus them in, and then they get other people to come in, who the sheep to the... yeah. I see
Follow
it going us. On.
But there's a lot of... I mean, what I love about my Facebook feed is that I have my, you know, really conservative... relatives and friends, and then I have my liberal friends, and then those are kind of like me. I have all the viewpoints, and overwhelmingly, the ones who were afraid of Trump, like since Election Day, who have constantly posted negative stuff about him, they really do think that all these horrible things are going to happen to our country, that Trump's going to increase the power of the executive branch, that increasingly minorities will be targeted.
People love, and that's, of course, not what we're seeing. It's the white Trump people getting the crap beat out of them everywhere. Dragged out of
everywhere,
their cars,
huh?
And stuff. Yeah. There's at least three or four of those stories a day.
You could find stories of Muslims getting beat the crap out of.
Show me.
Of course. Just do a simple search. Get out of your bubble. That's what I'm saying. There's plunty of stories out there.
Where are they? Why isn't CNN all over that? I mean, they would love that.
Well,
that'd
CNN
be their headline story for a week.
They're an objective news organization that cares about the truth, Robert.
Yeah. I mean, they do throw that stuff out there, but then later it comes out that, oh, I made it up. They didn't really rip off my hijab and mug me. That was a fake story. She made it up, like the poop swastika. I mean, all this social justice warrior crap gets fired up, and then later we see all these stories aren't even true.
Sometimes. I want to bring up something that, you know, this might be a good way to kind of end this here, because I don't know if Tom's going to join us now.
It's sad.
But, you know,
I
had a relative. I'm not going to tell you who this relative was, but this goes back to what I was saying at the beginning of the show here. This relative, I basically disagreed with them, what they were saying. That this relative said, well, the problem with this country is that only like 25% of people actually vote in a presidential election. And I said, actually, that's not right. It's more like half.
40 to 46, somewhere around in there.
It's usually closer to 50. And so he said, no, you're wrong. And I said, no, I'm right. And simple enough, I pulled up a Google search and I showed him right there. I said, no, this is it. But the craziest thing about that is this relative knows that I made presidential election videos. I've made a video for every single presidential election in American history. That's kind of what I devoted countless hours of my life to. And in every single video, I list the statistic of how many, what percentage of eligible voters voted in this election. And so, you know, they just say, hey, you don't know what you're talking about. Same thing with my post about the Electoral College. It's frustrating to me that the people that just assume, and like also the, you know, like when I posted the Electoral College thing, I had people saying, well, actually, if you learn the true history of it, and as if I didn't already do the research on my own, like just assume that I had never researched it ever in my entire life, that I'm just blindly reposting a petition to get rid of the Electoral College. This is something I've thought about for 25 years that I've weighed. I mean, like, and you and I have both thought, like, I know you've thought about this deeply. That's why I wouldn't be talking to you otherwise, because it would be fruitless. You have good arguments for both sides. Although your bias has clearly showed tonight that you clearly favor Trump over Clinton, and that you think that it's ridiculous to even suggest that an elector goes against what the people decided, you know. And so that's kind of my point too, is that,
well, then we just let those electors decide flat out. They don't even have the election. We'll just have our little panel of electors, and then they can decide.
Well, currently in 29 states they can't do that, but actually the rest of them they can. The other 21 states they can vote for whoever they want.
They're supposed to be pledged to that party, so
they could.
And that's how
the 29
chosen.
States they could lose the privilege of voting. Then they or be fined. In some cases, they find a replacement for them to vote instead of them immediately. And
yeah.
But, I mean, yeah, you're right. These electors, I mean, I think everybody almost agrees on this, the fact that these electors are the ones who are actually voting for president and vice president. And these people are just normal, everyday. I mean, yeah, most of them have strong ties to the political parties. They're literally the ones doing the voting here. And it's crazy to me how many people just now discovered that You know, they discovered it a few days ago. I guess better late than never, but it is.
Odds are at some point in a civics or government class, they were supposed to learn this stuff, but we both know how that goes.
Yeah. So, that's another thing. I think we wait for emergencies or perceived emergencies before we educate ourselves about things that people have been talking about for forever, but no one paid attention to them before. Which I guess is kind of, that sums up a lot of history teachers in this country, right? They're just guys, I taught you that. Don't you remember?
I mean, day to day, they can't remember.
But it doesn't mean something to them. People remember stuff that means something to them, and that's why we...
This does matter. They just don't get it. I mean, why do so many people think that the government stuff is boring? I mean... Like, my entire teaching career, like my first year, I think there were 5 kids in that class, though. You know, there was a bit, probably 1 or 2 of them really got into it. And, you know, that was like, call it 30%. That was enough to make it interesting and entertaining. Mm-hmm. But since then, I've like had 1 government class that was fun. You know, and it was fun because the kids got into it and they wanted to debate this stuff and, you know, they wanted to write out scripts and, you know, write their own constitutions and stuff like that. Like, why do they think this stuff is so boring when it has, maybe more so than any other class, a huge impact on the rest of their life?
To me, I think that in the future it will become more interesting because, a lot of this is because of Donald Trump, is because it has turned more into like a reality TV show where, you know, it's less lawyer talk. Because let's face it, the vast majority of politicians are former lawyers, and it's been this way since pretty much the early 1800s at least. I found an interesting statistic about how before, I think it was like the Thomas Jefferson administration, or maybe it was James Madison's first administration, or first term, that only a third of Congress was former lawyers. 2/3 of them were not lawyers. Whereas if you look now, like I probably should look up the exact number, like what percentage of Congress is lawyers. But lawyers almost speak a different language, really, if you think about it. Like they don't speak the language. Like if you were to watch C-SPAN... you would be like, okay, what are they talking about? The average American would be like, okay, I mean, no wonder it's boring. That's what you fall asleep to. You turn C-SPAN on to fall asleep to. I used to watch it. My wife would walk in like, how do you watch this? Okay. What's the percentage of Congress
that used to be lawyers? I was just more getting it like the Electoral College and lessons and stuff like that, or... Why do they think that stuff is so boring and dull?
Oh, this is fascinating. Holy crap, breaking news. If this source is correct. Okay. This is just a quick Google search, but this article says...
Lawyers no longer dominate Congress.
Is commercialization a profession of blame? Interesting. So, yeah...
1 out of every 6,000 lawyers is a current member of Congress.
In 1890, what? 1 out of every 265. So that's, like I said, early on in our country, we didn't have
this. How is that possibly right? There's way more lawyers than there are.
Washington Post is the one who first covered the findings. How the most disliked and elected profession is disappearing from politics. So... yeah, I mean, you did look at the presidential candidates this last time. They had varying backgrounds.
We had neurosurgeons.
It's interesting. A lot of business people. Think of like, the Bush family and Carly.
Hillary Hill Dog was a lawyer.
Only 5% of Americans have ever thought about running for elected office, according to a 2002 survey.
That can't be true.
58% of lawyers.
Because, I mean, at some point in your life, who has not thought about being, like, president or something like that? 5%? Well, I mean, would I say it on a poll? No, but...
I'm going to have to correct myself here. I said a third of Congress in the early Republic was lawyers, but I guess it was about half. So I got that wrong. I messed that one up. But
look,
yeah,
1849 to 1850,
almost 80% was former lawyers. Yeah,
that was old Lincoln.
And then lowest is the current.
Well, that's why they're having to get like college professors and stuff to write like their healthcare bills and things, their stimulus packages.
Well, what do you think? Do you think this is a good thing that we have less lawyers on the Hill?
I would say so.
I mean, that's my first
writing the mumbo jumbo stuff, but so much of that now is like the bureaucrats, like in the EPA and stuff.
That's true.
Have you ever seen the picture where it's like the reams and reams of legislation that was passed by Congress, signed into law? Then there was another stack that just dwarfed it and said these were the bureaucratic agencies and the regulations they passed.
Yeah, it gets pretty crazy.
It was like 100-1 or something like that.
Well, I think to make government...
Make it all simpler. Simplify everything.
Oh, yeah. But back to what we were saying about how government is boring to students and the majority of Americans, like... They're much more passionate about...
When it comes to taxes and stuff like that and how the government works.
Well, that's when I became interested mostly in government in particular. I always liked history, but government, when I started paying taxes, I started looking where my tax dollars went. And there's a great website called National Priorities that I regularly visit and kind of breaks it all down. And that, I mean, but still... It's a lot of technicalities. It's a lot of like, okay, what does that mean? You say defense spending. What does that mean?
Yeah, when
you
find out that your tax dollars are supporting ISIS, how does that make you feel bad?
Yeah, that's the stuff that gets me fired up. I mean, yeah, that's what happened. And, of course, nobody really brought that up much except for Rand Paul this last presidential cycle and talking about the Obama administration, like, doing that. And in general, though, it's just not that exciting, captivating stuff that because it's not telling any kind of story. It's those documentaries that
yet
do well,
relate
like,
to them in their mind either.
Right. Well, similar to this was I've really paid close attention to public perception of climate change over the past decade or so. And I've noticed that you see spikes in a lot of people really getting into it, like passionate about it after these documentaries come out, like An Inconvenient Truth, the Al Gore movie that came out, I think that was in 2005. You see a lot more people that were like, okay, we need to do something about climate change.
What year was it that he said we were going to boil alive in that?
Al Gore?
Yeah.
I don't know about that.
Like 2020 or something? Or we have till 2020 to save the planet?
That was one scientist you're talking about that was really alarmist on that, yeah. But there's this new one that just came out I saw the other day called Before the Flood. It's Leonardo DiCaprio. And, you know, he talks to the president. He goes all around the world.
In his private jet. Actually, lecturing us about...
They paid carbon taxes to offset that.
That helps. Paying that tax takes all that out of the environment, doesn't it, Leo? People like that make me sick.
You are such a rush to judgment here, man. You haven't even seen it.
Oh, my gosh. He's telling me how to live my life, and he's got yachts and private jets and flying around all over the world.
But he pays a lot more taxes than you do.
That doesn't mean he's taking the pollution out of the environment that he's belching up there.
All right, but back to the documentary.
It's like they think money makes it okay. Money, the rules don't apply to me. They do to you. I'll tell you how to live, but I'm more than for money. I'll fly around in my jet with my supermodel girlfriends. But
my original point was the documentary, it does a good job at humanizing it because you see actual people's neighborhoods destroyed by rising sea levels. And when you see that, I think that's when people really connect to it more. They see human beings directly affected by that, and they think, oh, that could be me. And that's why I feel like these documentaries are so powerful. You know, obviously, someone like Michael Moore, he has perfected the art and, you know, of propaganda. Like, and that's all of these documentaries are propaganda. Let's not just say that any of them are not. But the same thing about I'm doing a research paper right now on marijuana propaganda and how powerful that was, especially in the 1980s, shaping public perception. And it's amazing to me, like, the people, they when it's personalized to them, when they can see, like, oh, this could happen to my family or my kids or something, then all of a sudden, like, yeah, let's, I mean, that's the stuff that gets people out to vote and volunteer and protest and all this stuff. And that's what I try to do in my classroom sometimes, but to varying degrees of effectiveness. But, yeah, we need more of that maybe. And I know something like Obamacare is, it's easier to make propaganda where you see, oh, Billy Bob, he now has health insurance and he had cancer and he would have been rejected by a health insurance company before Obamacare. Whereas economists, yeah, like it's hard to like, because I also did another paper on the propaganda surrounding fracking. And there's a documentary called Frack Nation that's, I mean, it's obviously propaganda, but it does a good job at humanizing something that generally would not be easy to humanize, because you would just assume that, oh, well, he's a shill for the oil industry if he's pro-fracking. But what he did was he went around to show people that economically benefited from fracking. And in fact, their farms were saved, and you saw people crying.
Fracking houses and falling apart from earthquakes.
Oh, yeah, where you live. Yeah, shoot. Gosh, that's crazy. There was another earthquake the other day, right, in Oklahoma, northern Oklahoma.
Several a day.
Gosh dang. Anyway, I'm kind of rambling here, but the whole point was maybe to get people more interested in government, we need to see more of that. Even if it's obvious propaganda, it's still getting people talking about it. And we can always have propaganda from different
people
points
can't
of view.
Tell the difference. You know how many people cannot tell the difference between an honest... Like, you see this, all the people about all the fake media and all this stuff, and people can't tell the difference. Right. I mean, it's amazing.
Well, the,
I don't mean it's like the obvious fake news stories, but I mean, people can't tell the difference between a piece of propaganda and something that's unbiased.
Well, we saw what happened with Facebook this past year, all the fake news stories that went viral, like fake news stories. People kept sharing it without even doing the homework themselves. And, you know, that's one thing. Like, I understand if somebody shares something and it seems credible, they did a little bit of homework on it, and maybe the information is just pure spin. And, you know, obviously spin is everywhere, too. It's like you're giving correct information. However, you're spinning it in a way to match an agenda that you already have.
Stuff like Michael Moore's. So not honestly, I've never seen one. But, you know, he's obviously making it with an agenda. He's not going out there and saying, well, you know, this is. I don't even want to talk about Michael Moore.
But don't all media outlets have an agenda because they're trying to make money, right?
Would it be possible to not?
Except for NPR, maybe.
That's like the big question.
I don't think so, because we all have bias. Like, even, let's say NPR. NPR is supposed to, like, oh, they get money anyway. Like, it's coming in regardless of what they report. But really? That money? I mean, if they're going to... How are they expected to be the fourth branch of government to be really critical if they are getting government money? And the other thing is, when Donald Trump met with the New York Times the other day, I totally thought about Benito Mussolini when I saw that. Because what the heck are you doing setting up private meetings with the New York Times? We need a media that is constantly hounding our government. I mean, I don't care who's in power.
But Deng sure didn't do it the last 8 years.
Well, that's the thing. Like,
that's the thing. That's
they should have.
That's why they're falling apart. That's why people don't read it anymore. That's why people don't believe a word they say anymore. It's like 6% trust rate in the media now. 6%. How do you get lower than Congress?
But yeah, again, they all have agendas, and I know.
Yeah, I mean, this election just made it blatant.
So should there, like, somebody like, I saw a Bill Maher interview the other day. He said that media, there should be a lot more media that is basically treated like a utility, like, or not utility, but yeah, like something that the government gives money to, like taxpayer funded.
Because it would be wasting our government's money.
But the thing is,
if you're getting the money from the government, you're basically buying them off, right?
Well, I mean, that's my point against NPR.
If there's a need or a want, the private sector will fill it.
That's a great point. But the problem is they have to make money, and they have to get ad revenue. And so these, I mean, ultimately, corporations are going to rule out here, right? Because the corporations are the one giving them the money. And we already have corporations in bed with government, so... It, to me, like,
I
there's got to be a way.
On YouTube.
See,
I mean,
what about
problem
just
is people are just what you said earlier, and we've mentioned this many times, is people just fragment to their echo chambers. I mean, it'd be amazing if someone could, because, like I said, I could have written an unbiased news article about Fidel Castro. I mean, would anyone have gotten anything out of it? Or even if you said, you know, the supporters of Fidel Castro say these are the great things he did. You know, the detractors say all of this. I mean, it is possible. It's a little more time consuming. Maybe it's not as entertaining, but it'd be interesting.
Well, we have a couple minutes left. I just looked at the clock, so we better wrap this up.
2 minutes. No, Tom Ritchie.
Really sad that he didn't make it, but we'll get him on a future episode. I do want to do an episode that reflects on the entire year 2016, because it was a crazier year than we've had in many, and I think a lot of stuff happened that we missed, obviously, because we haven't been on the air as much, and that's my fault.
Find a good list of things, let me go through and highlight the main points, or maybe month by month or something.
Yeah, like a year-end thing. I think that'd be great. And if we could not talk about the election too much, that would also be great.
Well, I mean, that was the year, though.
Yeah, it was a big part of it, but we could gloss over some
everything
things.
Everything else that
covered.
Happened. Everything that you missed because of the election.
Well, that's also a big reason why I want to do that. Because so much other stuff gets neglected, like these protests that are going on, you know, to the pipeline. And,
I know. It's just unbelievable.
So anyway, so before we sign off, you can email us at contextpodcast@gmail.com, contextpodcast@gmail.com. You can find my YouTube channel. If you're already watching this right now, you know where it's at. It's Mr. Beats Social Studies channel, but for those of you listening to the podcast, just search Mr. Beat, and I should show up. I think I'm the third one that show up or something on Google search. And Robert, where can people find out where your stuff is?
ReadingThroughHistory.com is our website that we don't do near enough stuff on, but Reading Through History, it's right under Reading Through the Bible. It's like we're second on the YouTube search. You type in Reading Through and it'll like pop up there. You can check out our store if you're a teacher on TPT. You can buy our books. Find Robert K. Marshall on Amazon.com to buy our products or our digital downloads.
Great stocking stuffers.
The Kindles. Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for listening and watching. And we will be back to you before the end of 2016.
Hopefully.
Hopefully, yeah. Your time. You were ahead of 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 your time. He bought Louisiana, which doubled the size of the state. It was a really good deal, but maybe not constitutional.
Sheddle. He sent us Jesse Clark to explore the Japs territory. He never vetoed a single bill. Rarely spoke out in public. Thought we should be agrarian and our rights and alienable. Have faith in democracy.
You were a heavy times joke.